where the main dialectic of the day will be between the purest line of Bensky and Jurinsky and the decadent ingredients of the revisionist flavors from Baskin-Robbins.
Did somebody mention my name?
Is that all, Mr. Parkin?
I don't
know. That's no lie.
And that was the notorious nutcracker Nick Whitehead with his Homeless in Outer Space. Well, Nick, how did it sound to you?
Oh, am I live on the air?
Hang on. Yeah, I think you are.
Rambling Robert just asked me, how did that sound to me? Well, I'm more interested in how it sounded to folks out there. I thought it was a lot of verbal diarrhea, but that must have been the state of mind that me and my co-creators were in when we scripted that darn material. Whew, I can't believe it.
Huh. Well, that's a good question, Nick. Let's hear from listeners. How do you, any thoughts about this Homeless in Outer Space, part one? We've got parts two and three coming up probably next week and the week after, perhaps.
Sure.
Or maybe we should simply just drop Nick from the highest rooftop. What should we do? Give us a call at 427-3772. Let us know what you think of Homeless in Outer Space.
I just want to give some credit to some of the people who appeared in the play there. Brian McCracken was playing Professor Mike Plotkin. Joel Copper was playing Mr. Boondoggle, the owner of the downtown bookstore. Judy Haupt was playing the pizza delivery girl, and also played Lucy Lane from the newspaper. A fellow called A. Blinken, that's his real name, not A. Blinken, but A. Blinken, was playing the role of Stark Kent of the Failing Planet newspaper, and also playing the role of Bratman. And you're right, there was a cameo appearance there by Becky Johnson in the crowd scene in the city council chambers, and her son William Torpy was also playing a role. Of course, Brat Boy was a young actor called Matt Ryle. Matt works with me on Club Cruise, me and Becky on Club Cruise television productions down at Channel 27. There were, and a friend of mine, Mark Parry, played the city manager. Mark Parry, that rather English voice. I think that rounds up the people who appeared in part one. The sound recording was done by Ray Johnny and Ralph Williams, and Brian McCracken, the main actor, was also kind enough to do sound editing and put in special effects, and I think he did a pretty fine job on that. So that's my list of excuses and tributes.
Hey, and what's yours? Give us a call, 427-3772. Let the director and producer here know what you thought of the show, and well
that's only part one, of course.
Only part one.
They get into outer space later.
There you are. So, do you want it? Should we blast the director out into outer space with the show? Let's hear what you think. Coming up shortly, we're hoping to hear the arrival of Joe Williams, who's going to be doing some analysis of the downtown ordinances, and perhaps even the notorious Tom Noddy, who we have lately seen from the other side of a jail cell. Actually, I knew he didn't see him. You can't see inside the jail, but that's where he was.
Well, while we're waiting
for all these things to happen.
Come, Noddy. Oh, yeah, he might come, huh?
Let's hear a little more from the street here. From yesterday when, I guess it was Swami Y showed up. Actually, we're not going to hear any Swami Y yet, but some interviews around that time. A busy Saturday on Pacific Avenue, and some thoughts from the folks out there. Mm-hmm.
Passerby, that's a different perspective. Your name, sir?
Edward.
And give me your thoughts, Edward.
I just want to compose my thoughts.
Okay, so you said, again, repeat that.
I believe that maybe some shop owners feel that the voting tables could hamper the business that their shop receives if the voting table is directly in front of the door of their shop.
Well, if it's blocking the door, it's, of course, not appropriate. But nobody blocks the doors of businesses with tables. Even the stores that we're urging a boycott of, we leave enough room for people to walk into, but we clarify that we're there to encourage people not to shop at the Pacific Trading Company, not to shop at Jackson's Shoes, because of their support for these anti-homeless and laws that also criminalize street performers and political tablers.
It would be similar to a protest where they would let people go in and out, but they would just be discouraging business at that time, at that location.
Well, you're not allowed to block a business. That's not the issue. The issue is whether they can force you to, everybody to move more than 14 feet away or sitting, everybody to move more than 10 feet away or tabling, people to move along every hour. It's all a bunch of regulated behavior, which you may agree with, but I don't.
Actually, that's enough for now, I think.
Thank you. We're talking with...
Mistaken?
Again. Mistaken. We meet again. You must be mistaken.
Yes, I am.
Indeed. And you were taken into custody for what? When?
For being in one spot too long while I was changing. It was last year, like last October.
Really? Even though there was no move-along law last October, who arrested you?
I'm not sure who it was.
How many police officers?
In the town. There were two.
And where were you?
I was in front of the Metro.
And what were you told?
I was told to move, and then they came back an hour later, and I was in front of where they're doing the construction now, when there was nothing going on there. They just had a fence. They told me I needed to move along, and I miscalculated on the time, and I was still there when they came back by, so they detained me and took me to the station and then released me when I got there.
I see. Actually, it probably wasn't a move along. It was a city panhandling violation under one of the many different code sections. If you panhandle in a group of two, if you panhandle from a seated position, if you panhandle after dark, all these are criminal offenses, even if you do so in the most peaceful manner possible. We're talking with Shannon, who was downtown last night and apparently had an encounter with us. Had some skinhead folks?
Yeah, some lovely local boys.
What happened?
They were yelling that we should have all been gassed with Hitler and that if he had his way, all the hippies in town would be killed and he would do it himself. And he was yelling and screaming and throwing trash down in the street. But there were too many of us, so I guess they went away and beat somebody else up.
Perhaps the person we heard discussing that earlier, Crow was beaten, but who knows. Who are these youths?
I've actually never seen most of them before. One of them walks around here with a green spiky mohawk.
Huh. Yeah. Be on the lookout for a green spiky mohawk.
We're talking with...
We Tony McAllister.
And you're near Free Radio. We're not going to reveal the secret location, but you're also a guitarist.
I play guitar, is that right, son?
But you haven't been playing much guitar down on Pacific Avenue. Why is that?
You know what? I give up. I give up playing because pride in my art, actually, because of the way people look at you when you play. You know, in this country, it's the only country in the world. I've played all over the world.
You mean you think that musicians are held in particularly low esteem here?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, but on Pacific Avenue, certainly you'll get the respect you need from the police and the merchants, right?
Yeah, it's been I was never troubled by the police. In fact, I started playing about 20 years ago when I came to the town here. It's me and my partner, we had a wee baby on the back. Maybe that was the reason. I don't know.
You haven't been playing recently.
I haven't played recently, but I'm thinking about getting out there again. What do you think? Is it a good idea?
We welcome all newcomers out there. Just to be ready to not play within 10 feet of a building if you have a display device. Don't solicit after dark unless you're engaging in a musical performance.
I've got a little... when I played in Tokyo, last time I played in Tokyo was about 3 years ago. They still don't like you to play with an amplifier. I like to use an amplifier. I got a wireless amp, and I hide it in the bushes, you know, and I play on the other side of the street.
Strange voice comes out.
Yeah, I play on the other side of the street. You know, in fact, I go home and lie in bed and play. Yeah, no, just kidding.
Well, Santa Cruz got rid of all its bushes in 1989, right after the earthquake, so we don't have that problem. The police department decided too many bushes, and now, of course, we have a big bush in power, a real problem.
Yeah. Well, how about some We should write a care. Santana.
I mean, 10 years in jail and a $10,000 fine. We'll talk to you later.
Cruz, own a home. I'm a musician. I've been promoting a bluegrass music festival, the sole promoter, for 12 years now. And our favorite place to play is downtown. And, you know, the reason I go downtown when I don't need to get something at Palace or go to a movie or something is because it is a neat, colorful place. It's an exciting place. It's much like our ocean. You know, we wouldn't shut down the ocean if we started noticing sand up on the sidewalks. And I'm very glad to find that you're all supportive of the music. I was going to tell you how important it was, which I just did anyway. But you know that, and that's very pleasing. Thank you for trying to figure out a way to solve it. For me as a musician, to perform down there, the 10-foot rule won't work. Bruce mentioned that, and that would be my biggest sole point. It means we have to play out on the street, right at the curb. And I did that one time, and I won't do it again. I was sick for 2 days with the exhaust fumes and the noise from the cars. It's really hard. And then when we play, we're real good. And we get a very big crowd of people. They look just like you in a big semicircle. And they would then be standing in front of the store with their backs to the shopkeepers facing the street. And I don't think, we play in front of Del Williams all the time. It's the only place we've ever played. And I thought he was going to chase us away the first time we were there. And then I looked back 10 minutes later, and he looked like our dad with a big smile on his face. And he was looking at those 30 people staring at his shop from the front. And it works very well. I don't think the 10-foot rule would work. I think if there are essentially no problems down there with musicians, and there are existing laws to deal with real problems should they come up, I'd like to see the voluntary guidelines tried. If it doesn't work, if there's got to be a rule, a law, an ordinance, more bite, and I'm speaking only as a musician because I know this doesn't go very well with a lot of people whose email list I just got on, but I would favor the move along. As a musician, when we play in a club or somewhere, we play for 45 minutes or an hour and we take a break.
Time is up.
With the banjo and the fiddle in our band and our singing, we're very loud, and as good as we are, someone could get tired of listening to that and want to change, and we could probably work somewhere besides Dell. If you got to do something, get rid of the 10-foot, and we could move along.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please. Yeah.
And you're now listening to testimony from the January 14th City Council meeting, where the City Council, in fact, did pass the 10-foot forbidden zones in front of buildings, benches, kiosks, crosswalks, and numerous other obstacles downtown, which essentially criminalized street performing within 75% of the downtown sidewalk and on virtually all other sidewalks throughout the city if enforced. And of course, the Mike Rodkin proviso is always going to be, oh, we don't worry, it'll only be enforced in problem cases. However, of course, that leaves the discretion up to the police and the rights in the hands of the police. And the idea that you want to leave that, it's up to you what you want to do with that one. I don't like that idea at all. This city council passed both the move-along law and the 10-foot law. We're going to be having a discussion of that. Tom Noddy should be coming shortly. I just talked to him on the phone. He's a bubble-blowing, sometime juggler who has actually helped put together the Voluntary Street Performers Guidelines way back in 1980. And he's going to talk about his recent victory in the juggling matter, where the city council turned back the juggling law, or I should say clarified it, even though, they clarified it in an emergency finding, which we're going to play. We have a rather bad recording, a part of that emergency finding. I'm still looking for the tape that has the better recording, me and my tapes. So let's hear a little more of this dialogue at the 14th. Or actually, we're probably not going to have a lot of time to do that. What I think I'm going to do right now is go back to today's article in the Sentinel, the Dan White article, which talks about the downtown ordinances. And this assumes I can find it, of course. It's always... There we go. Here we are. This is an article entitled, again, The Law of the Street. And as Becky Johnson, who called in, I think aptly points out, this really gives the impression that everything is pretty much okay downtown. Of course, I've got to consider the source. This is Dan White, the Sentinel writer, who didn't feel it was newsworthy to mention that a juggler was arrested and held in jail for 12 hours on the streets of Santa Cruz, even when he had personal knowledge that had happened. He delayed any kind of information on that until City Council passed a change in the law, which made everything okay again about 10 days later. Now, I suppose it's okay for the Sentinel to be a PR person for the City Council, but I find it rather unfortunate, and I think it is really kind of a conflict of interest there. I predicted this, some of you may remember, in a dispute I had with Dan White the very day that this juggling issue came up when Tom Noddy came out on the sidewalk and Dan White was there, and I sort of asked the question, will Dan White be reporting this promptly and fairly? And of course, he immediately launched into me, uncharacteristically. Dan's usually more mild-mannered than that, but he apparently hit a soft spot, and he denounced me as a person who had no credibility and so forth. Unfortunately, I did have credibility in this situation. I wish I didn't. I wish I were wrong. But unfortunately, White did his thing again. Now, this article is, again, a similar... Well, I mean, there are good things and bad things about the article. The bad thing is that it's sort of... let me run through a few of the things. It's pointed out that Chief Belcher, we've mentioned, I guess Becky Johnson has mentioned, that he's claimed that there's overwhelming compliance with the new downtown ordinance. Sort of like saying in Baghdad, there's overwhelming support for the U.S. presence. Only a few of those evil Ba'athist Saddam leftovers are causing...
Oh, Robert, there you go again.
Causing problems, you know. There are only a few... It's not really a guerrilla effort or insurgency. It's just the... We have to find Saddam Hussein, and it'll all be over. We only deport the illegal chronic sitters and ne'er-do-well political activists from downtown. Everybody also fall into line with the merchant agenda, and this is, of course, the police agenda, too, and naturally Belcher would say that. I mean, that's what he thinks, you know, but in fact, I'm sorry, you're trying to, your mic is off, Nick. Do you want to say something?
No, I just said the merchant agenda, it sounds like a wonderful musical.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's actually sort of a grim farce, but it's what we're playing out on Pacific Avenue, even as we speak. There's some interesting points in this article. Modesto apparently has copycatted Santa Cruz, just as many other cities did in 1994 when the Coonerty-Kennedy laws first passed, where it was 6 feet instead of 10 feet, which was the forbidden zone. Now it's 10 feet if you're a performer and 14 feet if you're a sitter or a panhandler. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, here's what looks like either a factual misstatement or just something that's been overtaken by events. He says that in Santa Cruz you can buy an heirloom tomato, a water pipe, and designer T-shirts while being serenaded by an out-of-tune bagpipe artist. Well, actually, on this tape I have later today, we won't be able to hear it because there probably won't be time, that out-of-tune bagpipe artist tells us he was told not to play. So he doesn't play any of his out-of-tune stuff. I suppose that's good. You know, you don't want to hear out-of-tune stuff. But the impression that everything is rosy, which is what Mike Rotkin and the city council want you to believe, and what apparently Dan White goes along with as well as Steve Belcher, is simply based on statements that aren't true. It may be true anyway, and most of the time, that everything looks okay. You don't see the iron, the iron fist under the velvet glove. But if it's there, then it has its effect. You can't buy a water pipe. You try and display a water pipe downtown, you'll get a ticket for display of merchandise. Unless the police decide, for tactical purposes, not to proceed to do that. It's completely idiosyncratic and completely at the whim of the police officer or the commander of the particular shift. So that's one concern I have. You also have Dan White reciting some old stuff from 2002 about safety concerns, a fatal heroin overdose in May of 2002 in a portable toilet, a stabbing near Borders Books at 1200 Pacific Avenue, 7 gunshots fired into a van in broad daylight in the avenue's 800 block, wounding 2 men. All these things, as I understand it, happened last year, before the downtown ordinances. And, of course, the downtown ordinance is all these forbidden zones, and you can't leave unattended property, and it's illegal to hacky sack. All this stuff came up and had nothing to do with any of these violence problems. The violence was to direct everybody's attention and stir up the hysteria. The actual result was to simply give the merchants and the Candy Jackson of Jackson's Shoes petition, give the sidewalks over more to the merchants than they were before. And essentially the police as well. Because the police had actually been engaging in harassment activity throughout the spring of 2002 and into the summer. And what the city council did was they just gave them a broader blank check. They said, go ahead, harass some more, it's okay. Even though dozens of people showed up at the bogus Riley Porter downtown problem hearings to say, what's our main problem? Police harassment. And, of course, Dan White has no story on police harassment. After one good headline in the summer of 2002, he has done absolutely nothing on that. No follow-up on the breadcrumb crime arrest of Norman Friedberg, who was arrested for feeding the pigeons at Beaton and to the ground for refusing to take a ticket, and then dragged off to jail and held there for several months. Nothing on Jason Pascal, the African-American tarot reader, who was essentially deported, as I mentioned before, under the initiatives by Sergeant Baker after a whole series of bogus arrests. This whole thing is whited out in Dan White's column. Robert. Go ahead, Nick.
I want to ask you, Robert, as a former reporter myself on a newspaper, which I did for about 3 years locally, I know the editor. In the case of my paper, it was also the owner and publisher. And I know that he would sometimes say, well, we've covered enough of that angle, that story. We won't be doing any more of those for a while. And for a while always turned out to be forever. And that's why I left that paper. Who is in charge of Dan White and who governs those sort of decisions?
Well, Tom Honig is the editor of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. And, of course, it's run by a chain out of town, but it is in fact that he is the editor, Dan White. We have an incoming phone call. We have incoming phone call here, and we can keep some quiet outside the studio, you guys. You know, we have a riotous crew of jugglers just arrived in the studio. I may have to call the police. Let's see what we got on the phone here. Hi, you're on Free Radio, and you. In the studio. Thank you, please.
Hi, Robert. It's Roxanne.
Hey, Roxanne. What's up?
Well, Robert, I just had sort of a funny addendum to Dan White's article.
Uh-huh.
It occurs to me that everyone, including Candy Jackson, seems to think that things will be fixed downtown if and when they can just get rid of the crappy element, you know? Uh-huh. That's how they see it. Well, I saw the funniest thing last night. I went and I had coffee in the evening at a restaurant, and two girls were having a very difficult time getting waited on. They were part of the, quote, crappy element, you know. They didn't quite look right. And right across from them were two very upscale women drinking wine and having hors d'oeuvres and that kind of thing. Well, as it turned out, the very upscale women, the waitress came up to me and said, did you see where those two women went? And I said, that were across from me? I said, no, I'm sorry, I didn't. They left without paying their bill. So it's kind of funny how people are just targeted for the way they look or waited on so graciously for the way they look. But last night, the kind of people that they thought were going to do that very sort of thing to them, you know, people who juggle and wear beads, weren't the people that they really had to worry about.
You're here. Well, yeah, I mean, it's what's underneath, not what's on the surface that counts. But unfortunately, you know, in the merchant world of commerce, such superficial kinds of distinctions, and in the police world, too,
are often criteria. And the downtown was teeming with police. You know, there were police cars every time you looked up. There was a police car going around the corner. But the truth is I don't think they're going to find that their problems are going to be solved.
To me, again, I've always thought that a consensual process is what you want to use. You want to empower people who are, you know, have a strong interest in the community, like Tom Noddy, Robert Norris, and Sherry Connable, Joe Williams, and maybe even Nick Whitehead. All of whom are in the studio, except, of course, for Sherry Connable.
Sherry Connable is coming up.
And well, we'll see if we can ever get her on the show. But she does good work on the streets, and yeah, I mean, I think we need to have an elimination of laws that are essentially class-based and essentially forward what Tom Noddy at one time, and correct me if I'm wrong, called, what, culture war? Is that what you said, Tom?
Yeah, that's a term.
Yeah. So, Roxanne, thank you for calling. Anything you want to add?
No, I just think that this was exactly the same kind of thing that was going on a year or two ago at the farmers market, where people really felt they could tell who the, I don't know, who the people were that were going to cheat them or whatever, but you can't tell, and I don't think that it's making downtown any the better to just aim at one or two groups, because what I saw last night kind of just really made me laugh.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Roxanne. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We've reached the 1.5 hours before end of the show point, which means that's our hottest time coming up with some of the great minds of our generation and some of the great criminal minds. The notorious juggle criminal who's been posthumously made a non-criminal. That's the notorious traveling Tom Noddy. And then we have Jostle the Jarheads, Joe Williams.
It's Big Joe.
And, of course, Nutcracker Nick and the Peanut Gallery giving us a little cheer every so often. I was going through this article, The Law of the Street. I'm going to kind of continue a little bit more on it before I turn to my guests, since I run the show. I haven't got too much time, though, because Tom hasn't got too long. You could spend all day criticizing the journalism of Dan White, and that's not really the point. The point is to get to the facts of what's really going on downtown and to correct some of the myths. Dan did point out that these are some of the nation's toughest restrictions, the 1994 panhandling ordinance. He pointed out, to my, not surprise, but at least my information, that Modesto has apparently gotten new laws last month, which I hadn't heard about. I heard that another city had in the Central Valley, actually had a report from that city. I'm missing the name of it right now, but I will remember it sooner or later. Some factual misstatements. Berkeley has drawn attention for its street ordinances. Actually, it's drawn attention for the fact that the city council repealed its street ordinances and that there was massive resistance to the street ordinances in Berkeley. He mentions casually that the merchants lobbied the city council last year, and then they were accused of backroom dealing, but there's no mention of the fact that these ordinances were rushed through 4 council meetings in 2 weeks. I keep repeating that figure because you don't see it in any newspaper. You don't, the Alarm mentioned it, but it's not commonly known how rapidly these ordinances were rammed through in the summer of last year. And then you have Bob Lee launching a program which judges can ban chronic criminals downtown if they have no business there. I'm wondering how soon I'm going to be on the banned list. And here's something interesting. You know those downtown hosts that walk around with their purple, you know, vests and coats and shirts? They're supposed to be friendly folks. I always point them out as snitches for the police, as I call it in my rather nasty phrase, but I think that's a nasty thing to be. According to White Lee, the district attorney is looking into downtown hosts, paid greeters on the mall, possibly getting the same photos and aiding the police in eliminating chronic criminals. That's, you know, sit criminals, you know, criminals who sit on the berms of planters, serious types, who have no business downtown. See, the point is, that's going to be the question. You're going to be asked, do you have business downtown? Are you prepared to spend money downtown? Do you live downtown? Are you coming to and from? You know, that's the kind of question they ask you in a curfew violation. It has a very, very nasty ring to it. Interesting to learn that the new Chamber of Commerce Executive Director is named Greg Carter. I didn't know that. And we get Keith Holtaway saying that there is a surge of business applications for a gelato factory moving into the new Cooper House, expansion of Treehouse Toys, 2 businesses planning to clean up and put an Italian restaurant in the graffiti-smeared former Cat and Canary space. However, it also mentions that available retail space downtown went from 39,000 square feet last fall to 50,000 square feet in the winter to 54,000 square feet in the summer now. So there obviously is a growing vacancy problem in businesses in spite of these downtown ordinances. You know, I mean, And, of course, there's an increase in arrests, and Belcher, an increase in tickets at least, and arrests, I guess, would be a part of that. And Belcher has no stats pre-2002 about the downtown ordinances, the very thing we asked about to get some indications to how effective these ordinances were. All we know is that they're giving the police more opportunities to write citations, which isn't really much news. Stats in January through June, 34 citations relating to newer panhandling restrictions, and January through June, 520 citations for city code violations, a 30% increase over last year. I'll have more to say about this on Thursday, although perhaps I should comment on it. I do want to say that it is true that Dan White should be commended for getting out the specifics of the laws in a little sidebar called Downtown Do's and Don'ts, and I thank him for that. There's, again, so much missing from this article, which Joe Williams may be talking about, which is all the specifics that the city council was supposed to address, ranging from display devices to exemption zones to clarifying enforcement language. I'm going to now turn to a little of a city council from January 14th. You're going to hear some speakers speaking on the city council at the last of oral communications, and then the city council will begin to discuss the matter. But that'll be kind of we're going to hear a 2 or 3 minute warm-up of that, and then I'm going to turn the mic over briefly to Tom Noddy to do a little juggling for you. Tom, did you bring your juggling pins?
Oh, pins? No, what did the Karamazov say there? They're pins when they catch you and clubs when they hit you. We can juggle anything. You know, when they when I went downtown to juggle while the city attorney was claiming that it was illegal to do so, among the things I juggled that day, I made a copy of the law. I had several copies I was handing out, and I crumpled up three of them and juggled them.
No, wait, that sounds like the city attorney juggling the law, but now you were taking his role on that.
Somebody has to do it.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. Let's listen to a little of this and get ready, and then prepare for the discussion of the century, which you only have. Can we get you to stay up to 12:15, perhaps, Tom? What do you think? Are you really going to leave at noon?
I'm meeting somebody at noon.
Okay, we better. Well, why don't we just we'll hold off on any kind of taping and go straight into it. You were jailed for juggling, and I guess you've talked about that on the air a bit, right?
I don't remember, did I?
I think...
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I was here.
You either came in or we called the studio. You were held for 12 to 13 hours after getting jailed for juggling, and Dan White gave you a marvelous write-up in the Sentinel on that issue and went through all the issues with great clarity, right?
Dan White, I mean, it's really remarkable, isn't it? Dan White was there when I called the press to tell them that I would test this law. I would make an effort to give them a nice, clean test case of specifically just the juggling issue that they had that the city attorney had personally criminalized. And Dan White was among the press who were there, and he took notes, and he interviewed me, and he took notes, and he never reported it in the Sentinel at all. I mean... What is the point of having a reporter who then doesn't tell the public what happened? That's tits on a bull, that is. I mean, the very purpose of being a reporter is to tell people what you've discovered. But he withheld it, until the city did re-legalize juggling through an emergency resolution. The city finally, after having arrested me, had 13 hours in jail. Other press was reporting it, and then the Flying Karamazov brothers announced that they would come to Santa Cruz and they would juggle. Then the city council finally got up and decided to overrule their city attorney's mistake and re-legalize juggling. And then, now that the city was straightening out the confusion, which is the way Dan White put it, apparently some of the activists downtown had been confused and they thought that this thing was illegal to juggle. No, but the city is now straightened out that confusion on the part of the activists, so said Dan White in the Sentinel. For the first time ever mentioning it, he mentions it is suggesting that we were all mistaken. It was the city attorney who assured me that it was illegal to juggle that got me to go out there and do it. I wasn't mistaken, I wasn't confused, and I didn't accidentally juggle. I did it because the city attorney assured us that it was. I watched them stop this boy clown who was out there. He had a crowd of, I counted 19 children. He was entertaining, and I watched a police officer come over and stop him from juggling, stop him from unicycling, stop him from entertaining these children.
According to Scott Kennedy or Mike Rotkin, that only happened after he had been juggling for hours and began engaging in dangerous activity.
When did they say that?
At the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of July 8th in response to some concerns about the downtown ordinances being pretty absurd and discriminatory.
Well, that's Robert, you know, maybe I should ask them where they get that. I was there. The boy set up. I mean, I say boy. He's 17, I think. He's a clown, red nose, and I watched him set up. I watched him get ready to begin his performance. He did not juggle at all. Because the police officer had already told him he couldn't juggle. He pointed to his juggling pins and his juggling balls on the ground and then pantomimed juggling. It was pitiful. It was pitiful. She had already told him, I mean, because she saw him walking with the equipment and she had informed him that he couldn't do these things.
CSO Bechtel, Pam Bechtel.
That's correct. And he was baffled as to what he could do, but he laid out all of his stuff anyway. And then, as I said, he pointed to the juggling equipment and pantomimed it. She told him he couldn't ride the unicycle on the sidewalk as part of his performance. So he got the unicycle. He put it on the street, right next to where he was, and he, you know, did a little bit on the street, and then kind of did a little bit of his unicycling tricks on the street, and then he pantomimed tight roping a rope he'd laid down on the sidewalk. It was pitiful to watch him try to fit within these rules as defined by the police, as their understanding of what the city attorney Barrasoni and the city council had provided as rules for performers. I mean, what a pitiful thing, isn't it? The police. What are the police doing looking into a clown's bag of tricks? Why do we want city officials like Julie Hendy or Carol Skirsch or these people looking into a rubber chicken? Is that okay? Yes. No. Can he balance the music stand on? Yes. No. But can he balance the juggling club on his chin? No. Not on his nose, but not on his chin. What are they doing looking into seltzer bottle pie in the face? What are they even looking at the clown's equipment for? These are people who do this. This is, they're developing this art and they have for centuries. This is old than city councils, this is. This thing that we do with the public out there, the professional fools, we have a relationship with that public out there. The city council, if you really want to participate and you want to say, okay, that thing happened in Rhode Island, they caught fire, don't let them juggle torches. If you want to say, you know, those machetes, you just can't juggle machetes in the middle of a crowd downtown. I think that would be a sensible thing for them to want to pay attention to and to engage in a conversation with us about. I do not think that it's appropriate for the city council, for the police, or for the city attorney to try and even consider permitting us to do this or not permitting us to do this. This is something that we have going on with the public, and we have had for centuries.
So, actually, when you saw this business, and well said, Tom, Pam Bechtel, the CSO who went in, she didn't do this because the store was complaining, or a mother worried that some balls might hit her children was complaining. She did this because a host was complaining. Wasn't that the story?
This was the thing. They assured us when the city council passed a number of these downtown ordinances last year that, some of the council people actually ridiculed those who were complaining, saying that, you guys, you think that we're going to send the police? We don't even have money, Scott Kennedy said, to send the police downtown checking into everybody's business all the time. This is not going to be as you're describing it, where the police, they're only going to act on complaint. Nah, I really don't care for that principle myself. It suggests selective enforcement. I mean, I think it's intended to suggest selective enforcement. I don't think they should be passing laws with that intent. But even that slight protection that some performers might get from being selected or not selected for enforcement was not being applied. In this case, yeah, okay, oh, no, well, okay, it was applied. They only did it on complaint. But as you say, the complaint came not from a merchant, not from a passerby, not from anybody at all, except one of the quasi-police who walked right in front of one of the real police, made the complaint, and then the cop enforced the complaint. Just one behind the other. I mean, literally, walked down the street, and the guy came, and he saw it, he made the complaint, and then behind, and then the officer was reluctant to tell me who made the complaint, but it was Avery, one of the hosts downtown, made the complaint, and then the officer enforced the complaint and thereby stopped the boy from juggling for the children. Oh, stop it.
Well, but Tom, there's no problem anymore. The city council has legalized juggling. Hasn't that issue all been cleared up?
Actually, the act of juggling, yes, I believe, is currently cleared up. I think that was a very small part. And that was the weird thing. I mean, some of them are suggesting to me now that all is well, but I mean, last year when they passed this, and we were so upset that they were going to pass this body of laws, including a 10-foot restriction for performers who can't set up 10 foot from a building, from a crosswalk, from a drinking fountain, from a bench, from a kiosk, from a vending cart, or from an ATM machine. 10 foot for all that's the major attack that they made against street performers at that time. They assured us at the time that it would not outlaw juggling. And so now, in addition, and so now, after that, they waited a year, they added juggling, and now we got it taken away. And do they think that now we're even? Wait a second, you guys added juggling and took it away. That doesn't make us even. You still passed this 10-foot restriction, this absurdity. This was part of the real attack against street performers. I understand there were a body of other things that were passed at the same time that applied to panhandlers, that applied to information tables, that applied to other citizens' activities downtown, hacky sack players. But if I just stick to street performers, at the time, they put this major impediment into the art of street performing downtown, and that was bad enough, and that's what I was in conflict with. Since then, they added another tremendous one and now took it away.
But
that
actually,
doesn't make us even.
Actually, they didn't really take it away, Tom. They said if you juggle, you have to be more than 10 feet from a building if you have a little container that seeks any kind of money. So, in fact, even jugglers who had in the past would not be a part of this whole thing, they are still subject to the 10-foot law. They always have been subject to the 10-foot law. And, in fact, it seems to me to be more dangerous, if you will, or obstructive of traffic to have a juggler right out there on the curb juggling than it would be that having him next to, let's say, a closed shop, where it's illegal, for example, to be next within 10 feet even of a not just a closed shop, but a shop that's vacant.
Yeah, well, what you're saying is correct. The all street performers and all information tables are now being called upon to do it curbside only. This is an absurdity. Okay, forget for the moment about the rights of the performers or the art of performing. Let us just forget about the art of performing. But, okay, here we are. Forgetting about the art of performing, forgetting about the rights of performers. What about the merchants? For over 25 years, I was out there negotiating between performers and merchants and trying to solve various problems. Over a dozen times during that time, some merchant or another put forward the idea that what they really would like to have is, ew, these people to be away from us, out at the curb. They should be put out at the curb. They shouldn't be right next to my building. It occurred to a number of merchants through the years that would be a thing that would be desirable. And then we had a conversation. And then I pointed out to them that it only sounds like you don't want them near your building. Really? Okay, if it's a good act, do you really want them out on the curb? If a good act, a single performer, is out on the curb, and he gathers a crowd, as good acts are wont to do, that crowd will block your shop window, at least, maybe the entrance. But you don't want the good acts out on the curb. You want them with their back against that little piece of building that exists between the two windows, yours and your next shop. That's where you want a good act, because then his crowd gathers on the curbside. They're actually looking into your shop window. Maybe that's an advantage, but at least they're not blocking your window from anybody else that's going by. Okay, so good acts you don't want on the curb. You want them up against the building for your own purposes. Forget about the art of performing or what the performer himself wants. Let us just think about what the merchant wants. What the merchant wants is not the performer at the curb, if they think about it. They all agreed with me when they thought about it. They realized, no, that's right. We want the good acts. Okay, but the bad acts, they would rather they were away from. No, you don't want the bad acts out, and they exist. Bad acts, I mean, good acts come from bad acts. That's where they come from. There's something that's being born on the sidewalks out there in this town and in other towns across this country. Something is being born, and then that's part of that is that some of the performers are not polished yet. They're performing for free. They're not polished yet, and they're performing on the sidewalk. You don't want a bad act out on the curb either, because he's bad. He's singing into your open door. If he's got six little Grateful Dead songs and he doesn't play them well and he can't hit the chords, you don't really want him standing at the curb singing in toward your open door. Where would you rather have him? You'd rather have him with his back to that little piece of building between your window and the window next to you, the shop next to you, singing out toward the traffic so that the passersby who aren't interested in his sound can keep on walking by, drop him a quarter or not, and get on by, and you don't continually disturbed by him. You don't want the performers out at the curb. You want them with their back against the building. And you've just made that illegal.
Well, since the city council having passed two teeny tiny exemption zones around the Scribner statue and the planter next to it that will allow Planned Parenthood and WILP to table or possibly, I guess, a performer to perform there, and then doing nothing else whatsoever, and I guess Joe Williams is going to talk about that at greater length after you have to leave, Tom. What kind of indications have you had? You've been back in town for, what, about 4 or 5 days now, right? And you're... what do you make of the city council? Are they prepared to dicker? Has Emily Riley called you in for a huddle to work on this more sensible approach? Or do you find yourself still juggling in a vacuum?
Well, I actually did juggle yesterday, very briefly. Mostly I did my act. I mean, this is weird. Had I had one of my juggler friends in town when they when the city attorney assured us that that this anti-hacky sack law really would make juggling illegal, had one of my juggler friends been in town, I would have had encouraged him to go out and take the bust. As it turned out, I finally realized, you know, they don't even care if they're good jugglers or bad jugglers. They all can't do it. And I'm a bad juggler, so I went out and took the bust myself. But yesterday...
You juggled illegally yesterday. You were within 10 feet of a building, weren't you?
No, that wasn't illegal. There's another confusion, actually, about that one. I was in the alcove of a building.
You're on the private property of that business. Okay, that's different.
That's right. And I'm glad that you recognize that difference, because I don't think all of... that within that alcove, you are within 10 foot of the building face. What they failed then to recognize is that, but you're not on the public sidewalk, and that law that has a 10-foot restriction only applies to the public sidewalk. It doesn't apply to the private property that is within the alcove.
Interestingly enough, the police have also tried to expand that private property. So, for instance, when we tabled near the Del Mar Theater before it was reopened, they claimed that the entire sidewalk underneath the Del Mar awning and 10 feet beyond that constituted the illegal zone for... actually, they constituted private property. They said that's the private property. So they kind of do it both ways. They either expand the private property or else suddenly the public property goes all the way in and you can't do it because of laws against the, you know...
Well, I've had the city attorney...
Public property.
Excuse me. I've had the city attorney agree with me on the specifics of this. It is true. If it's private property, then they can use trespass laws and they can move you along if the owner of the private property expresses an interest in having you move along. But if they want to use the awnings, that would be fun, because Cosmic Chris was chased away from right next to the Cinema 9, what was the name of that warehouse, the CDs and that shop that closed. They have an awning that sticks out. Chris used to, you know, go there when it was raining. And they said that he was within 10 foot of the building. But if they claim awning space as private, then he comes in under this thing that I'm talking about, because then he was in within the private property. Oh, then Chris could beat that ticket. That stuff doesn't fly. They're awning the outside world out there.
Owning the awning. So in the 30 seconds you have left here, Tom, what's our next step? I mean, let's put it this way. I know you've kind of separated yourself from the more radical rabble approach to the issue of dealing with the downtown ordinances, hoping to get...
I don't know. I think I'm pretty radical, and I think I'm pretty rabble. You know,
are
I'm
you
radical.
Rabble-y
I am calling for respect for the First Amendment rights of the performers. I don't think it's always and only our strongest point. Just now, I put forward reasons why the merchants themselves, for their own selfish reasons, would want to end up on the same side of a particular issue as us. We don't have to only say that we are protected by the First Amendment. We are certainly protected by the First Amendment. The right of us to express ourselves freely in this way and has been agreed to by the courts, the Goldstein versus...
Well, how many merchants have signed up for your self-help program for the merchants, Tom?
How many merchants?
How many are backing your idea? Your ideas make perfect sense to me, and it would seem... But, I mean, have the merchants been, you know, kind of climbing over themselves in droves to sign a petition to the city council urging a change in the 10-foot rule, or...
I haven't used petition as the method just yet. That might be an interesting thing. I think we need a little more education on what the issues are. As long as the Sentinel continues to drumbeat this issue as one of street trash... I mean, Dan White really goes out of his way to characterize this over and over as street trash versus the poor set upon merchants downtown. And you know, he haven't had their ear. He absolutely refuses to even report the issues when they show up out of line with something he can't force into that little preset picture of his. No, I think that's despicable. I really think what Dan White has done in the Sentinel is actually despicable. I think it's a disservice to those merchants, certainly to the merchants who haven't followed all of the issues and don't really know that there's more going on. But I think it's a disservice to Candy, Moise, Jackson Shoes, and the Heinrichs, and the ones who actually are in the Downtown Association, who actually are, you know, on a campaign and a crusade to make things go their way downtown, because they're not getting proper feedback either. The police or people who now, you know, read that article in today's Sentinel in an effort to understand what it was that happened, what effect it's had, what it's like out there right now. He has so painted a picture that was preset a year ago. This is the same story he wrote before the year was up, and now he's putting it out there as though this is what's happened. This is the story he was telling prior to, and I think it's despicable that our daily newspaper, I mean, they've always had their interest and their little hand in politics, but this is not an opinion page, the front page. This is supposed to be a news report, and he's up to something, and they must have ethics classes when you go to journalism school. You also have to report it. Okay, you can color it, you can bury it, you can characterize it, but man, you got to report the stuff.
Well, you know, Dan, if you're listening out there, I know I've heard that you occasionally listen to the show. We do have a call-in number, and anybody else can call in, 427-3772. This isn't Robert Norris attacking you, the terror of the Pacific Trading Company. No, this is that respectable international performer, the man who had street performers' guidelines, made them a brand name in some areas for the last 22 years, Tom Noddy, Mr. Bubble himself. I mean, could this be Dan White calling in? Let's see, maybe Dan is going to answer us. Hi there, Dan White?
No, this is David Roberts.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, go ahead, David.
I'm sorry. I hope it wasn't Dan White, the guy who was George Mascagni's...
No, that's the other Dan White. Although, frankly, I'm not going to make that. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, I just turn you on. One, quickie, could you just give a quick review of the article today? And two, I used to live in Olympia, Washington. The Daily Olympian was owned by the Gannett Corporation, which owned USA Today. Do you have any idea of the ownership of the Sentinel?
I think the Gannett Corporation, the Wall Street Journal owns the Sentinel, I believe. Gannett owns the Mercury News. Isn't that right? We're not sure here. I think that's the case. Where are you calling from?
Downtown Santa Cruz, our apartment.
Oh, okay. And you haven't been listening to the show, right?
Yeah, I apologize. I just turned you on.
Yeah, actually, we are talking about that very article. So listen in some more and you'll hear some more.
Okay, thanks.
All right. So Tom, what's the next step for people who want to make change on this issue? I know that your issue is somewhat... I know you favor civil rights for everybody, and you're not big about enforcing the civil rights of every Nazi crooner who comes to town necessarily, but I should say every individual who wants to defend himself against a complaint. But even regarding this issue you're discussing, this rather narrow issue of the 10-foot rule that seems to be foolish for all parties concerned, what should folks out there do to help raise this issue? The city council is going away for 6 weeks. It'll be, of course, coming tomorrow. There's a day after tomorrow, Tuesday, there's a city council meeting. But there is absolutely nothing on the agenda about the downtown ordinances. This is the agenda of the city council, if anybody wants to see it. And it's, and there's also, I think, the oral communications time, which is back at 7 o'clock, so you actually know when you'll be able to speak, is mostly going to be taken up with the Sherry Connable proposal for a impeachment of Bush. I'd like to see the impeachment of maybe Dick Wilson, Chief Belcher, the Santa Cruz City Council around these issues, if we're talking about impeachment, or at least some kind of holding them to account. But what can people do in the next 6 weeks, Tom, or even the next 2 days before the city council meeting?
Well, I think just what you suggest, I think the city council created this particular problem. There are other problems that, the merchants and or behavior downtown has created. But this particular problem, this 10-foot restriction for performers, is something created by the city council. They can undo it. And I do think that people should contact the city council, contact your favorite council member or your least favorite council member or the entire body of council members and express to them...
420-5020.
and express to them your interest in this issue. I will be talking to the council, and I'll talk to, I'll try and have meetings with some council members during this this time that they're taking breaks from having meetings, and encouraging them to amend or withdraw this 10-foot restriction.
We have a call coming in, but I want, before you leave, Tom, to play you the little segment of the emergency findings on the juggling ordinance. Let me get this caller, and then I'll play that segment. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I read in the Sentinel this morning. Hey, Robert. Hey, Tom. I read in the Sentinel this morning that Santa Cruz is getting less weird. Well, imagine my surprise. Over the last year, and I'm a 30-year resident of Santa Cruz, I guess this all boils down to how you measure weird. Someone once asked Black Elk, the Lakota Sioux medicine man, what he thought of advanced society. And Black Elk answered, well, I guess that depends on what you're advancing towards. In the last year, I've watched all the gem traders and the hemp weavers go away, along with certain element of street musicians and a more humorous can-handling crowd. They're all apparently mute nowadays, according to law. And I haven't seen any reduction in the amount of hard drugs on the street. As a matter of fact, I was riding by the Palomar Hotel just a little while ago on my bicycle, and spotted one same old junkie as I saw 2 years ago whistling up at the same old window to get in touch with his connection. They tend to eliminate the elements in this town that, if they were intent on eliminating it, you know, you figure they'd want them to leave last. The cool people have other places they can go, you know. And the junkies and speed freaks and winos, they're a harder sell because they have a symbiotic relationship with the town. What do you think about that, Robert?
I hear you there. I think, what you say makes sense. And they're kind of a series of distinct problems, but I tend to agree with your perception, and it's borne out by the interviews I've been having with people. The bagpipe piper that supposedly Dan White found on the street, I interviewed him yesterday. He was told not to play, so he no longer plays on the street. I mean, Dan White is way behind the curve. You know, he comes out with his little photographer and walks around, does a couple of interviews, and as I think Tom says, he crams it into the same mold that he has before. I mean, there have been exceptions. Dan White did raise the issue of police harassment, mainly because everybody at the hearing a year ago raised the issue. But in terms of, you know, the rather well-documented series of changing police rules, dispersal of musicians, tickets, and even the arrests of Steve Argue and Matthew Hartog for tabling, which drew a huge crowd and many police officers, can't get into the Sentinel.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the city desperately is in need of money. As a personal experience, in the last year, I've had 5 tickets for various infractions for riding my bicycle around town, which is 5 more tickets than I've had in the last 27 years. I think the least they could do is shop for some charges for people that make the city some good money, like maybe the druggies. I mean, I know the prison industrial complex makes money for having people in jail, even though it's not really a correct approach to resolving the problem. But hey, if the city really wants to make some money, stop hassling bike riders and street musicians. Those are all piddly-ass little tickets. They should get people that they can put in jail for 10 years and really make some money on. I'm being facetious, of course.
No, I understand. I think going after corporate white-collar criminals in Santa Cruz might not be a bad idea either, though the focus of the show hasn't been on those issues. Perhaps we should begin to turn our sights on them. I mean, they hurt, I think, far more people than, you know, this dragnet that tries to, even the drug war, of course, you know. You and I probably have a similar view on the drug war. You know, messy as it is at the moment in terms of people, you know, well, I don't want to get into that right now. Let me thank you, caller, for your call, and quickly play this tape, which will give the findings, part of the findings. I don't have the whole tape, unfortunately, but you'll hear most of the findings. The emergency findings, I had City Council saying, juggling is such an emergency, we have to stop everything and deal with it, but all the rest of the stuff can wait for another 6 weeks.
Let me make one more comment, and yeah. I'll get off the line. At the downtown commission meetings last year, I made a comment directly to the city council that went unresponded to, that they will never do anything about the drugs in Santa Cruz, because if they started busting the druggies, they'd be arresting their own children. I would speculate that a large portion of the aristocracy of Santa Cruz has done an absolutely pitiful job of raising their kids, and they're taking it out on everybody else with the same type of parenting techniques. Anyway, you have a good day, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lee. Bye-bye. So what I'm going to do now is play this. Unfortunately, it's my tape. I had a better tape, which I'm still looking to discover. Maybe I will by next time. It's an official city council tape of Mike Rotkin, Councilmember Rotkin, giving a specific emergency finding at the beginning of the July 8th city council meeting, which describes why it is necessary to have a special emergency, which people were not even informed of before, to put the issue of clarifying juggling on the agenda. And, in fact, the juggling law change, which we have here, actually, maybe I should give you the honor, Tom, since you're the author of this change. I don't know if you want to read it or you think it's worth reading. This is the actual ordinance change. First, I'll play the latter end of the emergency findings, because I was only able to rush up and turn on the tape recorder a bit late. But this is Mike Rotkin giving the emergency findings as to why they suddenly are putting on the agenda juggling, even though it hasn't been mentioned. Normally requires a 72-hour notice, and here's that discussion, or here's that mention.
Rather lengthy, and then we'll move to your presentation, Amanda, okay? First of all, I'd like to say that this meeting has been televised live on community television in San Francisco.
No public comment was allowed, a violation of the Brown Act by Mayor Riley. The public has a right to discuss whether an emergency item should be put on the agenda. It's public business, but she declined to do that as well. I heard a chuckle from you, Tom Noddy, about as you look over the emergency ordinance. Any thoughts?
No, actually, I think it was an interesting process. I think it's what they in truth, you know, when the when this was proposed back in July of 2002, June 2002, I read the law that they had, and it looked to me like it would outlaw juggling. I mean, now some of them are trying to say to me, well, Tom, how could you read that as not outlawing juggling? Well, I read it so that it did outlaw juggling. And I asked the mayor at that time, Crone, to ask the opinion of the city attorney, because I believed that the city attorney would have to tell him that this anti-hacky sack law that they were passing would outlaw juggling.
Let me read that law, Tom, because I think you're right. The law reads, prior to what the city council did on the July 8th, no person, after having been notified by a law enforcement officer that he or she is in violation of the prohibition of this section, shall, in the community commercial, neighborhood commercial, commercial beach, central business, and tourist residential zoning districts, intentionally throw, discharge, launch, or spill any solid object, including but not limited to footballs, hacky sacks, baseballs, beach balls, frisbees, or other similar devices, or liquid substance, with the exception of Bubble Street performers, the naughty exception, who otherwise comply with all applicable statutes and ordinances, or otherwise cause any object or substance to be thrown, discharged, launched, spilled, or to become airborne.
Right. So that looked to me like, despite the bubble blowing exemption, it did appear to outlaw juggling. And so I thought that was a good example. The rush that the city council was in to pass all of these downtown ordinances, I thought that this example might stand out, that they might be able to see, that they'd, by the time I got back to town, they'd already passed that through one reading, and I arrived on the day of them about to pass this on the second reading, it would become law. I asked a number of the city council people to notice that they were about to outlaw juggling. They thought I was being ridiculous. They thought it was, you know, just me trying to give the worst possible reading to what they're doing. We are not outlawing juggling. This law will not outlaw juggling, they told me. I said, I asked Mayor Crone to ask the city attorney on record during the meeting whether or not it would outlaw juggling, because clearly it would. He would have to say yes, it would outlaw juggling. And that might shock. I thought I had three votes right then. As soon as he said that this law would outlaw juggling, I was pretty sure I had three votes to stop it. And I thought that process might cause a fourth vote to fall, and then I could stop this one from going through. And maybe if there was that kind of obstruction was thrown onto the railroad track of this thing that they were rushing through, this body of laws that they were pushing through in such a hurry, that if I could just create that much of a delay, that there was a chance that people would stop and notice how far they had gone. They were on the verge of outlawing juggling. So the mayor did ask the city attorney in the process of that meeting if this law would outlaw juggling. Thank you. And the city attorney, to my chagrin, said no, it would not outlaw juggling. I don't know how you could read it so that it didn't outlaw juggling, but apparently the city attorney was of the opinion that this law would not outlaw juggling. He said no, it would not.
My motivation for that might have been, Tom, that had he said it did, then you would have gotten this amendment change, which might have, as I said, derailed or slowed down a process that they were determined.
Would have slowed it down quite a bit, because they were about to go on their summer break. So all of August would have gone by without this thing being passed, which was my hope. I just wanted them to slow down. Stop just passing things. Talk about these things to people. Let us have a chance to reflect on what you're actually doing before you actually pass it. But I don't know if that was the conscious design of the city attorney, or if he was, I don't know how he could have read that law that you just read and not seen it as an anti-juggling law. But politically, I lost, because he said no, it would not outlaw juggling, and so they passed it without further discussion. The only consolation I got from that was that since the city attorney had told the council that it would not outlaw juggling, then of course it wouldn't outlaw. They couldn't then apply it against jugglers. 1 year later, they applied it against jugglers. And the city attorney didn't remember saying that, and the city council wasn't clear, and maybe we should pass a permit process if we wanted to get... Oh, my God, you guys, stop it. You said it. I went to the library. I got a copy of the tape. You can go to the library, you know, and listen to the tapes of these meetings.
Only in the last year. After that, they get destroyed and recycled.
But the council, you can get copies through them. But in the library, you can pick them up. They don't destroy them. They hand them back to the city council.
For a year.
Yeah.
After that, they get destroyed.
And then, so I listened to that moment, I listened to hours before I tracked down the moment where the city council member, where the mayor, asked the city attorney, will these ordinances outlaw juggling? City attorney said no. Then there was a poetic 18 seconds of silence that followed it. I made a copy of that tape. I played it for the mayor. I played it for one of the council members. I then transcribed it and sent it to all of the council members so they were all aware of the what, in fact, had happened. The mayor expressed her opinion that this was on a Friday. She said, by Monday, the word will get to the police. They'll stop applying against jugglers. I waited till Monday. I waited till Tuesday. I waited till Wednesday, and then went downtown and asked the police, and they told me that they believed it is illegal to juggle still. In fact, they've gotten a recent clarification from the city attorney telling them it does make juggling illegal, despite this process I just went through. It was then that I decided to go downtown and juggle.
We actually got a call from Assistant City Manager Martine Brunel relatively late in the evening.
That's right. I had gone to the office earlier that day seeking some city official to give me this response, whether or not it was now straight that juggling was legal. And then I didn't, you know, I had the mayor's suggestion. But then that night, I got this call from Martin Brunel about 10 o'clock at night, telling me that yes, he'd gotten it clarified. Juggling is illegal.
Did he say this with a straight face? Did he seem to be? Did he express any embarrassment in bringing this to you?
I haven't seen him with other than a straight face ever. He was on the telephone. I don't know if he was smirking while he was doing it. I doubt it. He seemed to just think it was matter of course. You know, of course, we've made juggling illegal in Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue. Of course. What are you talking about, Mr. Naughty? Of course, we've made juggling illegal on the sidewalk
in
Santa Cruz.
Say when you pointed out the transcript and you pointed out what the city attorney had said. What was his response to that?
He pointed out what the city attorney was saying now.
Did you, when you pointed out the contradiction, what was his response?
He pointed out what the city attorney was saying now.
Oh, I see. So it's the latest latest update that we should listen to rather than the previous.
Right.
I see.
So, but as you said, so subsequent to that, the city council reconsidered. After one arrest, after we don't know how many jugglers were chased away, they did, in fact, change their minds and decide that juggling and street bubble performing are not illegal as such.
Right, yeah, they essentially give you exactly the same law, and then they clarify with a subsection E that notwithstanding the law which we read, individual bubble street performers and individual jugglers who otherwise comply with all applicable statutes and ordinances are authorized to blow bubbles and juggle. Interestingly enough, it specifies these different zoning districts. When in the judgment of the Director of Parks and Recreation, the police chief or their respective designees, said bubble blowing or juggling activity will materially interfere with the pedestrian use of the sidewalk or attract crowds, which will create such interference, the city may require a bubble street performer or juggler to obtain a non-commercial event permit from the city as a condition of continuing or undertaking a bubble or juggling performance. And this shall not be construed to authorize hacky sack activity in the reference zone district. Tom, you've stayed 20 minutes beyond your time. You're welcome to stay longer, but I got to give Joe a chance. He's traveled all this way.
Well, I thank you, for this opportunity to talk about this issue, and sure. I thank you, Joe, for being patient and let me go through it.
Thank you, Tom. Listening to Tom Noddy, and we also have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Joan.
Let me turn up the. Go ahead.
It's Joan. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Have you been listening?
Yes, I have. And, I wanted to interject a comment here that shows you exactly how the city attorney will bend whatever direction they need to, depending on how much power or money is behind the necessary interpretation. And this is that example I said to this house that's being planned to be built up on, I think it's Highland Street. I'm not sure exactly what the address is, but it's on a slope that's over 50%. And the general plan prohibits building on a slope over 50%. So are you still with me there?
Yeah, I'm with you. Actually, I can summarize what you're saying, because we've talked about this before, you and you're about to bring up the fact that the city attorney said something to the effect that he made a special ruling that the word on does not equal above, let's say,
right, in the case essentially where the owner was ready to litigate because they couldn't build on the property, the city attorney said, well, it, over isn't on. He designed this building to go over.
And this means that if you have a dog over Pacific Avenue in a little vehicle, that's okay, but you can't have a dog on Pacific Avenue.
That's right. I successfully fought that ticket from Officer Bachtel. And but it's an interesting interpretation because you look at, let's see, the juggling isn't actually on the sidewalk. It's over it. And that whole thing that Tom Noddy was mentioning about the alcoves, I fought that, too, the same way, though it's also interesting that if you read the definitions of public space, the city actually has defined public space in a way they can include those private spaces if they want to. They just don't, they flip-flop on it, just like you said, any which way they want. But they are private spaces.
It's generally done by the police to give themselves maximum power of decision on these issues. That seems to be noticed.
But the police back off when you tell them, well, if you got the permission of the owner and you're in that alcove,
right,
they can't touch you.
That's true. You know, we're hoping we can have you on the air at some point. I know we were going to do some role-playing about how to deal with the police. Maybe on Thursday you can come on, or on next Sunday.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Well, thank you both for the interesting discussion, and little feedback on the radio play. It was way too wordy.
Yeah.
A lot of inside jokes would be difficult to understand, and way too fast for the average.
I think so. Yeah. Some people really enjoyed it. Others didn't. Nick has a very rarefied sense of humor, and he's working on it.
I enjoyed it. It was ingenious. But if you got something important to say, you should be able to boil it down to 2 minutes, according to city council, anyway.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you. And that was Jan Golder, who is the only man in town who was only allowed to ask 5 questions per month of the city council, and that only in writing. Unusual. Joe Williams, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathroom Spears Broadsides here on 96.3. Joe, you're
You were going to bring up the issue of the downtown ordinances at Oral Communications on Tuesday when the city council meeting is happening, but I guess, what are your plans? It doesn't seem to be on the agenda. I guess that's where you would have to bring it up. You mentioned it at the last city council meeting during the exemption zone discussion. Or did you? Were you there for the exemption zone discussion? I guess you were, right?
You actually
at the end of the, did you sit through the whole meeting, or did you just happen to show up? Or
what? Oh, I bopped in and out, and then figured out, you can kind of like, you know, gauge what's going on down there and go get a cup of coffee or go wander around and show back up.
I mean, it's not just a matter of having to wait. They wouldn't tell you when it was, and they took it off the agenda at the normal time. It didn't seem to you they were trying to make it more difficult for people to attend that particular.
I don't know. Actually, you know, in a way, I actually like Oral Communication kind of at the end because, you know, they put you up front. It's got a half hour. They get this time limit because they want to start the meeting, and then they proceed to ignore everything anybody has to say anyways. But at the end of the meeting, I thought it was great because it gave the public a chance to respond to all the hoo-ha and false statements and cheerleading, merchant cheerleading and whatnot that had gone on at the council meeting. So it was kind of, you had a chance at the end of the meeting to kind of give some wrap-up comments about what you had just witnessed that had transpired. So I would almost be in favor of moving Oral Communications to the end.
They'd move it to 11:30 at night. I don't think you'd get too many people waiting for that.
Right. No, that's true. Considering some of the council meetings do go on late, but I actually enjoyed that because it did give you a different opportunity for a perspective on what you just witnessed.
Well, you have done an extensive analysis of the January 14th council meeting when this council passed the last dreadful version of the downtown ordinances. That was 6 months ago. And you've also raised both here and at City Council the fact that City Council was charged with coming up with a number of addenda to that number. They were supposed to look for exemption zones. They were supposed to redefine container, define enforcement language. They were supposed to set up a mediation process in some way. I think there was 6 or 7 different things which they were supposed to do. And I guess you rather painstakingly reviewed the entire January 14th discussion of that. Still, of course, I know you haven't reviewed the December discussion, the September discussion, or the July discussion.
Of course.
Not to mention the March 1994 discussion. Yeah. So
another
lifetime,
I think. Get around to that one.
But you did do a lot of stuff. Now we got the tape set up here for, actually it's about the last 20 minutes of Oral Communication, and that of course will bring us to the end of our show if we ever played that, so we can't do that. But is there a particular part of the tape you want me to try to cue up while you're talking? I can look for it, or do you want to just talk about?
Not really. We're a little short on time, so you can.
Okay.
We have phone callers and whatnot. Let's dialogue.
Sounds good.
One thing seems to be in short supply around this town recently.
We're talking about, we're talking about the whole series of ordinances. Tom Noddy talked about the performers, and you are a performer too, of course. But I think you're also you're a political activist. You're concerned with the political activist side of it. I'm concerned even more with the main reason these ordinances reached the city council in the first place, and the reason that we even have them to begin with is because they wanted to get rid of homeless, poor people, and panhandlers downtown. And in order to do that in a way that was constitutional, they also had to limit other activities. You think that's a fair statement?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, overall, I just think it's a real disservice to the community. I mean, you make reference to the process by which all this, proceeded along. And I mean, I'm in basic agreement. I don't even think time is really the issue. I just think it's like, you know, an appropriate process was never engaged in from the start. And I think all this talk about, you know, wanting to foster dialogue and quotes, you know, from the mayor saying if you know, the process that we've engaged in leads to less dialogue, we failed. Well, we failed. We failed utterly and miserably, and we're continuing down the same path with no alteration in sight. I mean, so this is, some of these things are, I figure we just lay it at the doorstep of those responsible, and I think in this case it's the city council responding to. I mean, Sherry Connable has called it squeaky wheel legislation, and I think there's a lot of insight in that. And that if there's problems of public gathering downtown, I mean, this essentially issue public gathering. Where can you gather publicly downtown without running afoul of the police, the host, the merchants, you know, what have you? Is increasingly difficult to discern. And so if you're going to pass a bunch of laws saying you can't do this, you can't do that, you should have on the other side of the issue some kind of adequate signage or proposal to make public gathering spaces known to the general public. And it should be very simply stated, and the sign should be, yes, here is public gathering is allowed, and yada, yada, yada. And that was one of the things the city council actually discussed and then proceeded to just ignore. I mean, the reason I brought it up, and I brought it up the last two city council meetings, and I'm not sure of what I'm going to do to oral communications this time. I'll probably represent the Peace Coalition for this impeachment resolution. I might say a few words about the six-month review, but this is the whole thing. It kind of like sailed through. There was all this promise. Ed Porter was quoted, quoted him, and he was quoted as saying, on the tape, this is what, within the idea that there will be a lot of work done on this in the near future, on the basis of that, I'll support these downtown ordinances. Well, 6 months has sailed by. Where is all this work that has been done? This is the kind of thing. It's this bait and switch kind of tactics where you're trying to like deal with like what I would consider very real problems downtown, and coming up with something that is absolutely completely disconnected from the problems you're trying to solve. And or you take the approach like Pacific Trading Company and the problems that are in front of there with the gathering is that it's like a balloon. You're going to like push the people who are hanging out there in front of one of the stores. They're just going to figure out some other store to gather in front of. So what's the point of that? I mean, we chatted with Clark Heinrich out there in front of the store and just like, try to get him to see the point that he's doing a disservice to his other merchants. Yeah, well, they might be, you might have succeeded in dispersing, the people who are gathering in front of your store to somewhere else, but it's like, what do you got to say to the merchant who is now the beneficiary, ha-ha, quote-unquote, of the public gathering now in front of their store? You haven't solved anything. All you've done is move the problem along, and that's the whole idea of this move along. Not really dealing with any problems. It's just like push it around the street. And I don't think this is like any kind of solution, long-term solution for this. I mean, the laws are pretty vague. I mean, being, a lawyer to like attack these on, free speech grounds, selective enforcement grounds, and stuff like that, if necessary. But I think the city council and the merchants need to get their heads together with like some other members of the community and actually discuss the real issues, which, according, to their own words are, things like vandalism, shoplifting, drug dealing, sexual harassment, not enough bathrooms. I challenge anybody out there to tell me how any of the downtown ordinances passed either last July or this January have anything to do with any of these issues that merchants themselves have raised as problems downtown. None of it.
A couple of other things not coming up on the city council agenda, Joe, and a couple of things not coming up. I know that Greg Kindig and the, Coalition for a Community Commons, Cassandra Brown, Amy Courtney, we're looking to have events in August. Now, has that been set up? I don't see it on the agenda. Was it set up previously? Do you know much about that?
Haven't heard much about that. I know my understanding is there was two specific days set up.
To close down Pacific Avenue for a while?
Well, no, to close down like one block.
And is that in factually been arranged?
I believe so. That's my understanding. Yes, there was two dates set. I don't have those dates. I believe one's in August. One might be in September. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of like a demonstration project to close down. I believe it's the block that the Del Mar is on, just to close down that one block area to kind of give a look-see at what maybe an auto-free, pedestrian mall would look like and how that would work.
Do you know the dates that that's coming up for?
I don't. Maybe one of the listeners out there can clue us in on that.
Yeah, that'd be good. I haven't heard about that. Maybe I can actually make a note and try to contact Amy and Cassandra and Greg and see what the word is for the next show.
Well, I mean, just to continue, I guess, along this vein, it's the July 22nd meeting was earmarked back in January as specifically stated that would be the day that there would be a six-month review of the downtown ordinance to see what has been working. There was supposed to be some data collection. The downtown commission was supposed to be involved. I think the city council is treating them like kind of a bastard stepchild. They're kind of embarrassed by, the conclusions reached. from hours and hours of research and study by the group, and it is basically, you know, disavowing any of that. Scott Kennedy said, well, you know, been remarking on their opposition to exemption zones, the whole concept of exemption zones, just kind of brushed it off with, well, they were opposed to all the downtown ordinances anyway, so, of course, you know, we're not going to listen to them. I think is unfortunate because I think there was a lot of good work done by the commissioners, and I think there was a wealth of information discovered based on their surveying of public of available public space downtown, their interviews with the merchants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And just to have them so casually brushed off, I think, once again, is another disservice to this community by the city council.
Yeah, but look at the positive side, Joe. They did accept the minority report of Thomas Mantle and was it Jerry Mandel, the two merchant representatives, and essentially put forward their view.
Well, I guess so. Once again, you know, selective interpretation. Can we say that? I'm also curious. I mean, you mentioned the city council agenda coming up. I mean, there's two things on there that struck me. One is the parking permits, the downtown parking permits. That's sailing through on the consent agenda. So unless that gets pulled, that's just going to sail through. And I believe that's the one that's going to make... basically, any parking longer than 2 hours in any 24-hour period downtown illegal from Front Street all the way over to Mission, unless you purchase a $240-some-odd-a-year permit. So that's going to sail through with no public debate, like I said, unless it gets pulled on the consent agenda.
Yeah, that's item four for those of you who want to do it. And, of course, if you do pull it, be advised they may tell you that you will have to wait till the end of the meeting to talk about it. That's their latest plan to kind of encourage you to listen to their entire discussion first to give you a really educated perspective on every other issue before you return to the issue you want to talk about.
Well, this is like, you know, this is just another, you know, derailing of the public process. I mean, my understanding of this is that merchants themselves don't want this law. It's you know, they're divided on it at the very least because their employees come down here to park. So you've got, once again, it's like, okay, they're trying to balance or whatever. You know, they can give you some cock and bull story about what they're trying to do, but it's at the heart of it, it's like you've got the nomadic population down there, you know, cars, campers, whatever, in various places close to downtown, and this is basically bottom line an attempt to, you know, run them out of town, and it's going to succeed, and there's going to be no public input into this process whatsoever. The other thing that strikes me in terms of the city council agenda, and I would love to get the language on this, they're changing the bylaws for the downtown commission.
Yeah, I heard from Bob Guzley something about this. He's a downtown commissioner who actually opposed the downtown ordinances and also tried to clarify to the city council last time that the claim that the downtown commission supports exemption zones is just false. They rejected exemption zones. Instead, they came from the city manager, from the assistant city manager, from Julie Hendy, and from two members of the downtown commission who support them.
A minority of the commission.
A minority of the commission, which has seven members in its entirety, the two merchants, Mandel and Mantle. So, yeah, what I heard on Sam from Guzley is the question of, first of all, the downtown commission meetings have been cut back to one every other month, I believe.
Hmm.
So it meets less frequently. But also, before we go into that, actually, let me really jump back, because the permit parking stuff was supposed to go through the Transportation Commission. And, in fact, the Transportation Commission said, please don't pass this, it said to City Council, until it goes through us. And they passed it anyway at the last city council meeting. Actually, it was in June. They passed it and said, we're not going to wait for you. And they went and did it. This is sort of a brainchild of the city manager's office. That's Dick Wilson, the man whose long speech takes up two pages of the Santa Cruz Sentinel today, if you want to watch it, listen to it, who was finally at last not criticized personally or politically by Christopher Crone, but who was actually... the suggestion was raised in the Good Times, as I mentioned earlier, that the city manager be made an elective office, since the goddamn city manager runs the city, and since he's been doing it since 1984 without a challenge, he gets paid more than the entire city council all put together.
$160,000 a year.
That's correct. Since he's not going to take any salary cuts, as far as we know, and that was proposed at the budget cuts, it was rushed into executive session by Rotkin. I think with Kennedy dissenting, to his credit, as I recall, I didn't see that actually, but I heard that that's what happened. You have a permit parking process, which, as you said, it's going after, they're going to take free space and sell it back to you. That's what they're doing. They see it as a revenue source, although it's not really a revenue source because they got to hire more people. it's kind of one of these expanding bureaucracy deals.
Oh, of course, and that goes along with the new meters they're putting in. You get wind of that, where it's like, you know, you've got 20 minutes left on your meter, but they got a sensor buried in the ground. You back out of the space, it resets it to zero.
Right. I was almost ticketed because for some reason the sensor was defective, and the same officer who was seeking out my parking meter several days before, he's a CSO and doesn't normally give parking tickets, but he likes my car. He thinks it needs more parking tickets. he went after it the same day that he surveilled the political table I was working on for, I guess, a total of 4 hours. We were only allowed 1 hour at a time, but we kept changing tables and changing people and trying to get around their crazy law. So the downtown permit process, which is item 4 on the agenda, the consent agenda, you got to come in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon if you want to talk about that item, although you may have to come back at 11 o'clock at night. It's possible to be able to talk about it.
Right, that's afternoon session, I believe, right?
It's the afternoon session at 3, but they could put it to the end of the evening. Mm-hmm. That's what they've done in the past when I've raised it, not all the time, and I suspect they might be a little embarrassed to do it, but maybe they won't. Part of that whole thing, and I haven't read the latest item, but when I was following it in the Public Works Department, it comes out of the Public Works, it states that not throughout this entire district, not only will it be illegal to park for more than 2 hours, it'll be illegal to park at all at night in areas where, even in non-residential areas, where there's no, you know, where there's normally no controls at night. So even essentially what it's initially they had as a part of that free parking zones in the city and metered zones would also be ruled illegal to park in at night after from 1 a.m. to 8 a.m. or 12, I think it's 12 a.m. to 8 a.m. which is just, and it was described quite candidly as an attempt to deal with the camping problem.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
Vehicle dwellers.
Even if you aren't dwelling in your vehicle, let's suppose you really want to follow the law. You park your vehicle, you go to a friend's house, you sleep there. No, can't do that anymore. So it's straight class legislation that they're doing. These $160,000 a year city employees, apparently, you know, they want to fill up the city with people like them.
It's the whole process of making the city unfriendly to certain elements the city doesn't want around. I mean, you can, you know, it's really interesting. You have the CVC, the Visitors Council there, and you read their materials or go to their website, and they promote the weirdness of downtown Santa Cruz. They've got pictures of street performers and yada, 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 and, you know, they consider that a marketing point to draw people to this area, but the reality is quite different when you look, you know, peer behind the curtain to what's going on. I mean, this is all coupled with also at the same time this parking permit legislation is going to affect in the city. UCSC is now going to 24-hour enforcement. And they said, you know, before there used to be, you know, no controls like from 5 till 5 p.m. to, I guess, 6 a.m. in the morning or something. And so there's a big rush of students to, like, drive up and park on campus. But now, okay, that actually would relieve some congestion in the residential areas, you know, adjacent to the campus. But now they're going to have 24-hour enforcement up on UCSC. So that means even more vehicles in town. So, I mean, the bottom line is this, is they're making Santa Cruz residents, you know, more, it's tougher to do anything here. It's an inconvenience, all the way around. So what do they think they're doing?
Why isn't the city going after UCSC, of course, is the perennial deal? I mean, it's UCSC that's created much of the problem. I mean, there are problems around the boardwalk, and there's some problems with SoCal.